Well, how you doing? Zach Costin,
TJ Laramie,
Adam Henrique,
Joe Siddle,
Tom Crawford.
Holy Mackinac, you're listening to Wind City Sports.
What up, everybody? My name is Drake Damore, and welcome back to the Wind City Sports Podcast, Windsor's only local sports podcast, presented by Annisburg Chevy Buick GMC, coming to you every Monday morning on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere a podcast is found, featuring interviews with local athletes, coaches, entrepreneurs, and more. And now back to our weekly format after our brief hiatus the last year or so. The Wind City Sports Podcast, check us out on social media, at WindCity_sports on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all sorts of social media. Give us a subscribe on our YouTube channel, the Wind City Sports YouTube channel. Follow and like on any other platform you might use. Talk about that later on in the show as we normally do. Always sharing some cool stuff and keeping you up to date with Windsor Sports Online throughout the week and getting you caught up here verbally on the podcast every Monday morning. Another gloomy day here in Wind City as it is Monday, October 25th, 2021, and it's episode 230 of the Wind City Sports Podcast. And we have a great guest coming up this week, a unique guest, and getting away from our triple threat episodes of Windsor Spitfires coaches. For some reasons, I decided to, you know, just release them all one by one. I was going to spread them out and get this interview in last week, but just due to my podcast account and stuff like that, it was better to drop the podcast with Andy Delmore last week, a longtime NHLer, hockey player overseas as well, pro hockey player, and coach for a good 5 or 6 years at least now. He's been behind the bench for a few teams and now finally lands a job here in Windsor behind the bench of our Spitfires, the team he grew up watching. So you can hear that interview from last week. Previous to that, we had NHL All-Star Stanley Cup champion Mark Savard on the show. He's our new Windsor Spitfires coach, along with goaltending coach Perry Wilson. I got to get caught up with him the second time on the show. And Jared Smith, a long time coming to have the assistant coach Jared Smith on the show and tell some wild stories of his playing days that aren't known to a lot of people. A lot of people aren't familiar with his playing days and or him at all. No offense, Jay, but that's why we do the shows, to tell these people stories and get them some exposure. So check out some interviews with our Windsor Spitfires coaching staff from this month on the Wind City Sports Podcast. And from the past, you know, lots of people have been on the show, including Bill Bowler. So pretty much the entire front office staff of the Windsor Spitfires have been on the show, plus a lot of alumni, of course, as well. Well, let's talk about this week's guest. This week's guest actually is a former hockey player, as you'll hear a little bit about. He actually has an Elite Prospects page, played some Junior C. Promoting or talking to him about hockey or whatever, you know, not to list this individual as another hockey player that's been on the show. This guy is a lot different than a lot of the people that have been on the show. We have had coaches and trainers and stuff like that on the show in the past, and we got another one in a very interesting kind of way of doing it nowadays with technology. I've seen this guy on Instagram before and you know, seen his stuff and just didn't know he was from Windsor until seeing another video. Known as the Muscle Doc on Instagram, you'll see some of his videos pop up once in a while. Great videos he makes, and I've seen him sit down with the creator of an upcoming documentary about Windsor pizza. It's called the Pizza City You've Never Heard Of, by Gregory Paul, a Windsorite who really wanted to show the world about Windsor pizza. And he was recently on our guest this week's show, his podcast. So this our guest this week, he's got a podcast. He teaches personal training. He's a chiropractor. Let's get to it. You know who it is already. If you're listening to this, it's Jordan Shallow. Dr. Jordan Shallow is on our Wind City Sports podcast. And again, just seeing that him and Georgie were shooting the shit on the podcast, and it says something like two Windsor boys or something. I said, I had no idea this guy was from Windsor. And I even, you know, mentioned that to him at the beginning. But, man, cool. We're going to talk a lot about Windsor in this podcast today. Just Windsor stories. Again, Jordan's going to tell his story and tell us about what he's done and what he's doing now in the world of personal training and chiropractic. And as well, he had a powerlifting career after his junior hockey career. Interesting story from an interesting cat, and It's coming to you this week, presented by Amherstburg Chevrolet Buick GMC, located on Sandwich Street South in Amherstburg. They're now offering the Fall into Savings event with 0% financing for up to 84 months, and this includes the new 2020 Buick Envision. Comes in a couple different colors, but again, the Fall into Savings event offering 0% financing. Check them out at amherstburggm.com. Again, on Sandwich Street South in Amherstburg, give them a shout or go down there and check out some of the beauty cars they have lined up. It's where a lot of the hockey players get their cars, the local hockey players, and tell them the Win City Sports podcast sent you. Again, that's Amherstburg Chevy Buick GMC, located on Sandwich Street South in Amherstburg, offering the Fall into Savings event, 0% financing for up to 84 months. And again, our guest is not necessarily a neighborhood kid. He's true and through a Windsor guy, as you'll hear a lot on the show. But before we get to that, we'll talk about the Windsor Spitfires a little bit at the top of the show, as we normally do. And then later on, we'll get you caught up with some other things. Actually, before we get to the Spitfires, the Fratmen, again, they've been killing it. And if you missed it, there is a pretty negative story out there. And I was able to talk to CBC about it and kind of give my opinion on the future of the team. And let's see, I think they're playing today, actually. As I speak, I always record the day before, so I'm talking to you on Sunday afternoon. Oh no, it's actually their bye week as I'm reading here, but they're 6-0. They're killing teams. I'm looking at the scores, you know, 63-1, 68-6, 51-28. They're killing it. And that's one of the things that I wanted to make apparent on CBC earlier this week. And if you haven't heard, their last game was against the Hamilton Hurricanes, but there was a visit from the Brantford police to talk to Brandon McCraney. He's a running back on the team. He has a criminal history, and they found a gun on him, and you know, he's been taken off the team. He's going to court and all that kind of stuff. And I have no knowledge on any of that. I guess he was involved in a stabbing downtown 2 years prior, which is crazy to think that he was even playing in the league to begin with this year. But you know, in regards to the team itself, like I said on CBC, I think that their winning culture is just gonna prospire, I guess is the word to use. Mike LeChant and his coaching staff, they've been so successful for so many years. I'm sure again it's gonna be a challenge for the coaches and the staff to you know, not necessarily ignore this this situation, but you know, be transparent about it, talk about it with the team, and kind of try to clear the minds of the players about this. So again, bye week, and then we're going to see how they come back. I think they only have two more games left in this regular season. One against the GTA Grizzlies, where they opened up with that 63-1 win over, and then again the Hamilton Hurricanes. Looks like both are at home, so we got two more home games at that beautiful new field at St. Clair College, now the St. Clair Fratmen. Might have even mentioned AKO Fratman earlier. I don't even know. But again, just kind of a negative situation. But I think that team has such a winning culture that they're going to do the things that they need to do to get that done. And what that might be, who knows? Because that's one thing I didn't make it to air on Thursday there as we were talking. They said, you know, what could they do? I said, you know, they got to get together and they got to address it. They got to talk about it and, you know, maybe do some team bonding, you know, have dinner together and talk about it, and watch a Thursday night football game. But anyway, again, the Spitfires off to a rough start, rocky start, as we said last week as well. Although they are sitting in fourth place in the Western Division, they are 2-3-2 this season so far, within what, seven games. Is that math correct? Yeah. So you know, two wins and two overtime losses, giving them 6 points. They're doing all right. You know, it's really not the worst start, and it's still early, still very early. Most recently, over the weekend, an overtime loss, a shootout loss to Kitchener in Kitchener, and then a defeating loss to Owen Sound on Saturday night. But this week they're back at home. They're welcoming in Guelph. I'm trying to make it for my first game of the year. And after that, they also have a game on Saturday. It's a Halloween-themed event, where they'll be welcoming in Kitchener Rangers, for a matchup at 7 p.m. on Saturday, 7:30 on Thursday, and 7 on Saturday. here in Windsor this week. Live hockey is back. And I wanted to make it quick this week and short and simple on the Wind City Sports Podcast so we can roll into our interview with Jordan Shallow now. Here we go.
I'm here with another Windsor boy, fellow podcaster, a chiropractor, and also a powerlifter. He's the founder of Prescript and RX Radio podcast, an online coach known as the Muscle Doc, Dr. Jordan Shallow. Welcome to Wind City Sports, man.
What's happening, man? Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much, dude. Like, again, like I said, we're going to get to know you a little bit through this interview, briefly kind of talking about it, but where were you kind of growing up? What area of city are you from? What schools did you go to? All that kind of, you know, basic stuff.
Yeah, so I moved to Windsor when I was very young, like four or five. I lived in Riverside my whole life, pretty much. So like right by the high school, went to Hetherington Grade School, went to Riverside High School, did a few years at University of Windsor before I went up to Toronto and then out to the States. And parents are still there, same house I grew up in. So now that I'm back in Canada, like, you know, just going back to the old neighborhood, it's pretty nostalgic. And yeah, it's funny. It's such a small place because we're everywhere, man. Like Windsor people, you'll be in the most random corner of the world and you'll be like, wait a minute, I remember you.
Yeah, man. That's one thing we talk about with a lot of people too. And then that's the fun of doing this show, is just finding people that maybe I've never heard of or that I didn't know were from Windsor and, you know, telling their stories, getting to know them and talk the same kind of shit that we are right now. You know, like you said, just it's a small place, but it's a big place. Everyone knows each other and everyone doesn't know each other. Windsor's a crazy place.
Yeah, I think so. There's a certain pride that people from Windsor have that I haven't seen and expressed from any other city. I've seen people interact with each other in different places outside of their home, literally all over the world. And at nowhere do you find an immediate connection between two people, like a shared experience, like people that grew up in Windsor.
Yeah, dude. And that's when it comes into play here a lot, talking to athletes, where it's like, well, if you got to cross paths with another Windsor guy, I'm sure that was like a cool thing for you, right? Or like a relieving thing. Like even for me, when I moved to Sarnia for a bit, if I met someone from Windsor, I was like, oh, fuck. All right, cool. Windsor, someone from Windsor. And that just alludes to exactly what you're saying, right?
Yeah, there's just, I don't know. No, regardless, it's funny. My buddy Killian from Windsor, my producer for my podcast I went to high school with, he's here in Toronto. And it's just like, there's just an understanding. Like there's, what's the best way? Because the high isn't super high, the low is not super low. And at the end of the day, everyone just drives a Dodge Ram. Like you make 400K, you make 40K. Like everyone just drives a Ford or something. And like, I don't know, it's a cool, it's like a leveling ground. Like it's a common table that everyone sits at. So like you go other places, like, there's pecking orders and it's clicky and there's elitists and there's all this where it's like no one's trying to pretend there's something they're not when they're from Windsor.
Yeah. And I'm sure you're seeing it out there too. It's not like saying I'm from Toronto and you're from Toronto too. You know what I mean? It's like if you're from Windsor, it's like, oh, again, where did you go to school? What area did you grow up in? People start asking those kind of questions. If two Toronto guys are like, yeah, you know, so what, right?
Yeah, it's too, Toronto is too big to have that like degree of separation.
Mm-hmm,
and there's just not that shared experience. Like there's too much breadth in the potential experience where, you know, you're going to grow up in Tecumseh and you're like, okay, maybe these things were, you know, a certain way, but you know, the west end of Tecumseh to Highway 3, it's a pretty uniform experience. So like, you know, you're going to get your ass handed to you down. You're going to get punched in the head. You definitely, regard rich or poor, people don't give a shit. Like there's a certain, everyone's kind of walked in the same shoes. Like the second you get, and it's funny because it's the most, and I drive it now to see mom and dad all the time. But the second you get south of Chatham, it's the most boring drive, but I'm never more excited.
Yeah.
You just get on the other side, you hit that Tilbury exit and you're like, oh man, it's like, yeah. Manning Road is coming up. And you're just like, yes.
Yeah, no, I know. Like, I was to say that too. Like, as soon as I hit like the Essex sign, I'm like, all right, here we go. Finally, we're getting there.
Right.
Same thing. Right. But it's funny that you kind of touch upon some things that I obviously will talk about and that I always think about too, is that Windsor toughness too, is something we always talk about with people. Talking to a lot of athletes on this podcast. So kind of talking about it before we got started, but you played some hockey. I'm sure you played all kinds of sports growing up before you started, like, you know, really getting into the weights and all that other kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, minor hockey was kind of my big focus. I swam a bit in high school. I did some track and field. I played soccer. You know, you just honestly, it's something that when I talk to Windsor athletes, it's their parents are just trying to keep them out of drugs. That's really all it is. It's like, what do we got? Pickleball? Is it on Friday night? Yeah, sure. Put them in pickleball. Like, just keep them away from drugs. But it's a scrappy town, man. Like, you don't realize it because everyone's like, I wasn't necessarily like a tough kid or anything like that. I didn't think, because I knew tough kids. Like, I was, you know, you get beat up. I was a bouncer downtown, and like, you know, there'd be some guys like, yo, if he fucking died, I know about this guy. Like, I'm out. If he fires off, I'm leaving out the back door. And, but you take that anywhere else and you're just like, you know, and that's the thing in comparing it to Toronto. It's like, it's small enough to have that degree of separation where everyone kind of knows everyone, but it's also big enough and exposed enough where you can get big city trouble, like in a real small radius. Like, you know, you want to find trouble in Windsor. Like, you're not hard pressed to find it. Like, so that, where some smaller towns where everyone knows everyone, you know, they're relatively sheltered, where it's like, you're not sheltered in Windsor. You grew up watching Channel 7, Channel 4 news. Like, you read about, you know, kids getting shot, 8 kids dead before you even fucking had your bowl of cereal in the morning. So it's a weird contrast of like most insular communities that have that cohesiveness, that connectivity, that, you know, that degree of separation or lack thereof, also have seemingly a separation from, you know, the insensitivities of like the real world. And Windsor has all of the good and all, I don't want to say all of the bad, because it's a lot of what, like, I think allows, and I obviously this is like speaking at a much broader sense, and I don't want to like put words in anyone's mouth, but like, I think it allows people to be comfortable in uncomfortable situations, like be grateful for things that they have. Like, how many of our friends, like parents, lost their jobs in 08? Right. You just get used to like shit going wrong sometimes. And it's just, when stuff goes right, you're stoked. And then if it goes wrong, you're like, oh, well, yeah, this isn't as bad as that one time. It's the single most, I would say, like outside of like my parents, obviously, but it's the single most impactful thing on me as a person as growing up in Windsor.
Just where you're from, you know, it's who you are kind of thing. And it kind of alludes to what you were talking about before too. Again, when you meet somebody from Windsor elsewhere, those kind of things pop into your mind and you know that person understands.
Yeah. Like one of my closest friends, I met him a few years ago, and it wasn't for probably 3 or 4 months that I even realized that he was from Windsor. Oh, and then I'm like, of course. And it's just like, you know, like loyalty, respect. These are things that, like, if shit popped off, I know this kid would 100% have my back. And like, that's just something that you like, it's team colors, man. Like, it's just, and in most city, like if you're in a fight and you're from Toronto and some other guy knows you're from Toronto, that other guy from Toronto is just going to leave. Where like someone from Windsor, like, no, that guy's fucking, that guy went to Brennan. I got him.
Like, yeah. Even if you don't want to, it's just right. Like, fuck, you got to do it. But like, he's a guy from home, right? So you got to have, everyone's got each other's back.
It's a tribe, man, for sure.
Yeah. It's cool, man. But that, again, that's why I love doing this. And it's a sports podcast. So you talked about, you played a lot of hockey growing up and, probably other stuff just recreationally, whatever. But when did you kind of start getting into like lifting weights and kind of getting, obviously you have like a passion for that kind of stuff, obviously being the coach and stuff. So like, where did it kind of start? Where did you just want to do it just to do it? Or was it for any specific reason?
Yeah. I mean, from the age of like 7, I got on the ice playing hockey, and that was really like, that was it. Like, that's all I did. I was a goalie. I had goalie magazines. I knew all the stats of all the players. I watched every game. Like, I played year round in summer leagues. I went to goalie camps. I'd go to the States. I'd go up to Toronto. Like, it was kind of all in. And then you get to an age where you start to realize what's differentiating like the good players from like the great players. Like, you know, your age out of like the AA system and played, or the single A system. And it's like, well, what's next? You know, you're 17, 18 years old. You end up like bantam and midget. And then it's like, well, you either go to juniors or you stop playing, or you go to Forest Glade Arena at like midnight every Thursday, or go bug Butch Ott to see if you can get on a team down at Ice Park or something. And it's like, well, or you can play juniors. So it's like, well, okay, like, how do I do that? And then someone was like, well, you should probably do like off ice conditioning and like start working out. So I started working out just to get better at hockey. I was like 15, 16 years old. And it's like, you know, the writing's on the wall. You only got a few years left. And if you want to make a run at being a, you know, playing junior C or junior B or whatever, and just kind of edge out your career a little bit longer, like, this is what you did. So I got in the gym to just get better at hockey, believe it or not. And I liked, so I was a goalie kind of a majority of my hockey career. And, you know, goalies are very, it's a very unforgiving position where it's, you know, you can have a good day and it still be a bad day. So I think weight training kind of got me where I was directly in control of the result, right? There was like, if I put in the effort and if I put in, you know, the time and I monitored my nutrition, I did all that, like I would be a direct beneficiary from the effort I put in, where it's like, you know, you can practice and you can run your ass off and you can do all the drills. And then, you know, you can end up like, fuck, dude, I grew up playing against like the Wellwoods, man. Like, I remember like almost a mercy rule. Like the entire Tecumseh team was just one of the Wellwood brothers. And like, he scored like 9 goals on me one game. I'm like, this is bullshit. I could go to the gym and I could do a bunch of bench press and then my bench press gets stronger. Like, oh, I like the control here. Like, I like that I can kind of master this domain and I can be, you know, the efforts I put in. And for years, like, you put in, like, you know, you practice 7 days a week. Like, you just lived on the ice. My undershirt I wore under my equipment was never dry. I bought it and I wore it and it was just continue. I would put it on a rack or something in the back, but I'd have it on again before it could ever get dry for like a decade, like for like 15 years of my life. But with the gym, it was like, oh, okay. Like, I can be in direct control over this. And if I put that same effort into something, and it almost taught me to like work harder. Cause like, I need to be in a situation where not only I can control my performance, but I might have to compensate for someone else who can't perform up to their level. Right. So it's like, what if I have a defender? What if we're shorthanded? It's like, you know, you try and carry as much of the load as you can. And then you take that almost like super compensatory mindset into something that doesn't even really necessitate it. Then all of a sudden it's like, wow, like you can start to see things exponential. And then once I started to see that, it was, you know, I played a few years in Kingsville when they still had a junior C team, yeah, which I'm to understand now they don't have it anymore. And then by the end of it, I was lifting weights was really at the forefront of my mind, and hockey was the formality. So, you know, kind of very easy transition for me to walk away from the ice and just to start to continue on into weight training. And then it wasn't until 2016, I did my first powerlifting meet when I was in California, and I had a pretty strong base, and I landed in a pretty cool gym at the time with some top like world-class lifters. And I really had an accelerated start getting into the sport and was able to kind of take to it pretty quickly.
Well, that's cool, man. I mean, pretty seamless and easy transition, I guess you can say the word transition, you know, kind of, because like you said, you're put into sports as a kid just because your parents just want you to do it. And that's all you know is hockey. You didn't really know that there's other kind of things out there like that. So once you get older and you start to discover these kind of things, that's when you discover your passions too, right?
Yeah, it was like hockey definitely taught me a lot, but that transition was basically went from hockey to weight training to school. And then when I finished school, it was almost like that was like another you know, transitory state of like, I, you know, you're not really a student when you're in high school. Me, it was just like sports. And then getting into grad school and I moved to California, it was like, you know, I was kind of, I think, punching above my academic capacity. I was like, oh, why am I in a grad school program? Like, this is ridiculous. So I really changed my vocation from, I would still work out all the time and that never changed, but like, you know, I definitely identified as a student. So I was like an athlete forever. And then it was like a transition into student. And then when I graduated, it was like, I don't want to identify as like a chiropractor. Like, that always seemed lame to me. So I wanted to, because in school, it can be competitive. In sport, it can be competitive. And I didn't have an outlet to compete anymore. So then I was just working out one day and some guy was like, well, you know, you're pretty strong for your size and maybe if you ever considered powerlifting. So I just kind of gave it a shot and thinking like, again, all my training partners were literally world record holders. So I entered this meet in Santa Cruz, California. And like, I thought I was just going to get the shit kicked out of me because every day I go to the gym and like all of my training partners are way stronger, but realizing that they were the strongest guys in the world. And then I showed up to my first meet and I did quite well. And it was like, oh, okay. Like I'm basing this off of world class. And then I just kind of kept at it for the last like 5 or 6 years.
So like, obviously you're familiar with the sport through like the guys you were training with, but like prior to that, would you ever like hear powerlifting ever interest you or anything like that?
It's funny. The only person I had ever heard of was a Windsor guy, was Kelly.
Kelly, yeah, was Kelly, I've had him Kelly a long time ago.
Yeah. So like I knew Kelly and so oddly enough, like I knew of Kelly and what he was doing, you know, and then there's like the Windsor fitness world that I kind of like fit into a little bit now. It's like, you know, Fuad and his podcast and Kelly and him and the downtown crew of bouncers, like it's mixed in there and Central Good Life when that was still good or life.
Yeah, that was still I train at Central actually.
Yeah. So like all those day. Dudes.
Yeah.
Plus when I was in California, the only other guy I had heard of who was doing powerlifting was this guy named Dan Green, who was this world record holder, very famous in the sport. And that was who ended up being my training partner. So the only exposure I really had was, you know, just hearing from Kelly through the grapevine after I left Canada, what he was doing in powerlifting back home and on the world stage. And then this guy, Dan, who ended up just being like, you know, by pure luck, ended up being my training partner and who actually signed me up for my first meet. But other than that, I was like, people compete at this? Like, yeah, that's kind of, yeah. I didn't, no idea how it worked, like commands and weigh-ins and all this and weight classes. And I don't know, whatever. I just lifted weights.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's not like something you see on TV every day or, you know, or whatever, right? So
right, yeah. It's pretty fringe. I mean, social media has definitely driven its popularity and increased the number of eyeballs on it. But it's not like you're turning on TSN seeing highlights of the last meet, right?
Mm-hmm. And it makes you want to kind of do it, right? But you talk about like all the schooling you've been to, and obviously I went to California. So like right after like high school, at that time, obviously you're playing, and that's where you start to get into the weights. So did you decide like I want to do something with this? I want to go for like kinesiology, or like what's the story there?
Yeah, so believe it or not, I studied 2 years at Windsor studying history and political science. I was always in my mind, I was just going to be a history professor. I like the subject matter. It's still something that I read a lot, like to this day, like World War One, World War Two, like North American European history. But it was just the people, man. Like it wasn't the environment that I wanted to be in. Like I remember going to labs in the University of Windsor, and like, you know, there'd be like a 10-minute break for after an hour, and like the people around me would be talking about like whatever they do at that games workshop store next to the movie theater in Devonshire Mall where they paint the little figurines.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And they like, and I was like, what? So I just sat there by myself, like, and I don't know, I was fairly, I think I was like fairly extroverted. Like my job was always in some capacity, whether working at a gym or working downtown, I was always like interacting with people. And then I was like kind of the odd man out in the program, because like I just liked history, but I also liked lifting weights. And it was to the point where the subject matter was really interesting and I enjoyed the course curriculum, but I couldn't get on board with this being my group of peers for the rest of my life, like this being my colleagues and pursuing that at like a post, you know, postgraduate level and like a doctoral level. Like just the idea of, you know, not having any shared interest outside of that was really odd to me. So then I just switched majors into kinesiology and moved up to Toronto with kind of the focus then was I made that transition of going from, you know, I was getting into kinesiology with the goal of getting into chiropractic college afterwards. So, you know, 2 years later, I got accepted to Palmer West in San Francisco, California. And I was just like, all right, well, I guess I'm just going to go live there. And I just packed up and started school. So I moved out there September 17th, 2011, maybe 2011. And that was kind of it. October 1st, I started my first day of class, and I just kept my head down for 4 years. And on the other end of it, I have this little piece of paper and a kind of a license to do whatever. And yeah, it was a complete 180 from where I started, like from sitting in, whatever Letty Library or whatever the hell it's called at University of Windsor. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just being in California with the graduating however many 8 years after that. But I couldn't do anything else.
Yeah. I mean, so it takes time to find your where you want to go or how you're going to get there kind of thing too, right? Like how do you decide like right out of high school that you want to do that, right? Or that you're sure that that's what you want. You know, it's hard for kids to make that decision. It takes time.
Yeah, I think it takes figuring out what you don't want to do too, right? Yeah. Like in the same way, like a whale or a bat might find its way around. It's like, I'm going to throw a bunch of stuff at some walls and see what comes back. And that's, I more or less ended up here, not necessarily by like, especially now, like I have like a fairly obscure job day to day. I think for someone who's like technically a chiropractor, but you know, it's basically what I do today is a direct consequence of all the things I didn't want to do before. And now I have the freedom to not do those things. So I'm just left with like what I like concentrate. That's where I'm at right now. Every day is just like stuff I like to do concentrated and trying to get rid of all the other stuff I don't like to do.
Yeah. I mean, you've been able to create yourself a great life and do a lot through, you know, learning and teaching better yet as a coach as well too. Right. So, I mean, that's one thing I wanted to talk about was being able to travel and just being able to go to school alone in California. And then, I mean, fast forward a little bit to now as well, like throughout all the people that you've probably trained and are going around supporting throughout the world, a privilege to all of this is being able to see the world, right?
Yeah, no doubt. And that's why, like, you know, I was never like a great student by any stretch of the imagination. It's always funny to me that like people will, you know, like, what does he do? Oh, he's in education, or oh, like he teaches. Like, wait, me? Yeah. I guess for most of grad school, playing nine ball pool in the break room. Like, you know, I could teach you how to do like a three rail bank shot or something, but teach, what the fuck am I doing teaching? But I think it was ultimately like, you know, I saw what learning could do to, you know, like someone's lifestyle. I was like, well, fuck, if I could just teach people this stuff and, you know, I could put a barbell in their hands and I could put a clipboard in the other hand or whatever, and they could see all the stuff that I get to see because they know some stuff. It's like, well, yeah, like, hey, yo, this is how stuff works. Go use this and go get out and see the world. So it's, yeah, it's still not real to me. Like, I don't know, never, like, you know, you grow up in Windsor, it's like maybe once a year you go to Florida. Or like, you know, you scratch some cash together and you go to Mexico with your buddies or something. Yeah. Or like, maybe it's not even that. Maybe you go to like Sauble Beach.
Yeah.
Grand Bend. Right? Yeah. So it's like, it's still wild. Like I just got back from the Middle East and it's like, it's not lost on me, like how crazy it is that I just talk about lifting weights and I lift some weights and I write some stuff down about lifting weights. And then I'm in, you know, I'm in Dubai or I'm in, you know, going to Saudi Arabia or Australia or whatever. It's insane. It's completely insane.
Yeah, man. I mean, again, you've done what a lot of people, what everyone should do and make their passion their work, right? And make it that way you don't have a job. Like you said, you don't really call yourself like a day-to-day job kind of thing. And that's your passion and, you know, teaching people how to do this kind of thing. But you have experience as well, like we talked about in competition. So let's kind of go through what you've done competition-wise for powerlifting. Like you said, back 2016, and I found like a little history on all the things you've done. So a good, like, I think until 2019, maybe the pandemic stopped things, and we'll get into that. But tell me about like the competitions that you've been able to do.
Yeah, so my first meet was in Santa Cruz, as mentioned. It's called the Surf City Open. So I competed most of my powerlifting career up till now at 110 kilos, so like 242 pounds, which means it's like a bit of a weight cut. Like I'm usually a bit heavier than that. I walked into this first meet with zero expectations and like kind of thought if I had any expectations, I was going to get my ass handed to me because all my training partners every day were just, you know, orders of magnitude stronger. But meet went really well. I remember it was Father's Day. So it would have been like, what, June 18th or something like that was the first meet I did. And I won best male lifter, best overall lifter. And I won my weight class, which was like, that was just crazy to me to like, I didn't know how it worked. Like, I was just like, okay, I did my last deadlift. I'm just going to like pack up and go home after being here for like 10 hours. And then they're like, wait, like, what about awards? I'm like, you guys give out awards for this? Are you joking? Like, what? So sure enough, like the first meet I did, I was like, oh, and like I started to see like what the other like amateur numbers were in my weight class. I was like, oh, like, okay, like I guess, you know, it's almost like the Roger Bannister effect. Like I go in every day and I see the equivalent of people running 4 minute miles. And I think my 5 minute mile is slow, relatively speaking. And then, you know, you go with the rest of the population who's kind of amateur in the way they approach their training, and they, you know, they just do it as a hobby. So I kind of, that paired with like putting content on social media, sort of melding my worlds together of like rehabilitation, chiropractic, sports performance, and then more specifically like powerlifting. I was able to compete. I think my next meet was Reebok Record Breakers, if I'm not mistaken. And it would have been November 2000, like maybe November of that year, I competed again, which was like a pretty big meet. And you know, the head judge for my squats was like the greatest powerlifter of all time, this dude named Ed Cohn, who's now like a really close personal friend of mine. And I, you know, was just able to kind of ascend and put together some pretty good training cycles. And I think my third meet was the Arnold Classic the following March in Australia, Pro Raw 9. And I was able to, I think I got third at that meet. Which was crazy. Like I just picked this thing up as a hobby and I was flying to Australia to compete. And like, you know, I did a few seminars and I was actually able to make some money, which was wild. And that really, that was the biggest catalyst of my career. Like a friend of Dan, who had Dan Green, who I was training with at the time, I had met years prior and he'd come over from Australia to compete. And he had issues with his quads always cramping up when he was squatting. And I was still in like the clinical portion of school when I first met this guy, and I was just there to help Dan. And Dan was like, oh, you know, could you help this guy out? And he's like this little, you know, his name's Imad Nayef. And I didn't know. I was just like stoked that someone would trust me enough to try and help them out on the day of a meet. And I helped him and he was able to get through for the first time and not have his quads like cramp up, and he completed a meet. He was really excited. And 3 years later, I get a message and he's the guy who coordinates Pro Raw, this meet at the Arnold Classic. And he's like, hey, like, you don't remember me, but this is what you did. Like, I see you're getting started in powerlifting and, you know, I watch your stuff on social media and, you know, you did this for me so many years ago. Like, I'd like you to come out and host a seminar and compete at the meet. So I was completely like blown away. And that's really what catalyzed like the career path I'm on now. And like teaching was like, I had this opportunity. I'd never done a seminar before. And, you know, it was kind of just dropped in my lap as like almost like a reciprocation, a show of good faith. And I went out there and I competed. I did well, and I got invited back the following year. And then I got sponsored some point in that year. And I did Record Breakers again the following year, and it did quite well. And I think that was actually my biggest total. I think Record Breakers 2018, 2017, I totaled 1901 at 242. So I like squatted 704, pulled 755, and benched 441 at 242. And, That was like a big catalyst. And yeah, with COVID kind of taking everything sort of to its knees, haven't been competitive since June 2019, maybe 2018, 2019. And then really the seminar thing sort of took over and the education thing started and the business took off from there. And I took off with it, literally been living mostly out of a suitcase for the better part of 3 years now. Yeah. Traveled all the way through COVID. You know, only recently, probably 6 months ago, maybe almost a year ago now, have a residence in Canada, but I'm always just on the road. If there's ever someone who's like, hey, we want to hear you talk about lifting weights, like, I'm there.
Just need a place to stay. That's all.
That's how it started, man. Like, I was living in San Francisco and I was living out of my car. And, you know, for 2 months or 2 weeks out of every month, I was able to like find someone who would basically pay for me to fly in wherever they were. And the only thing I charged them was like my room and board. It was like, cool, I don't have to sleep in my Toyota 4Runner for this weekend. And then I would go back and I would.
That's how they all start. That's how they, you know, it's got to start somewhere, right? That's where all the great.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, it's part of the fun too, to be like, remember back when we had to do that? Look at me now.
Yeah.
And so like, I don't know, would you think maybe you'll get back into competing, or is just the last couple, because it's kind of new, you know, it's only been a couple of years that you've been kind of doing the whole thing, so just seeing enough success and kind of good with yourself right now, or hey, never know, right?
Yeah, we'll see. It's definitely tough. The job demands a lot of travel of me, and it's not a lifestyle, if you're going to be really competitive at it, that lends itself to, you know, living on airplanes and and missing training sessions and being short on sleep. So I definitely enjoy the competitive nature that comes with business development and entrepreneurship. And that's kind of been what's fulfilling that identity, fulfilling that competitive outlet or vehicle. So I've taken to developing, you know, a handful of companies over the last couple of years, and at different levels of, you know, incubation and maintenance and growth and all that. So lots to learn on that end. Powerlifting is always something, and training is always something that, you know, it's part of like a day-to-day life, and the platform will always be there. No immediate plans to compete. Yeah. But I think the competition for me is like a day-to-day, you know, on the business side. Like, I don't have a formal business background by any stretch of the imagination. I was just like kind of good at talking about lifting weights, maybe. Is that what I do? And now all of a sudden, you know, I have, you know, a staff of 20-25 people around the world, and you know, another business that I'm getting off the ground, and it's so it have enough challenges before I try and go full blow and back into powerlifting. So
yeah,
it'll be there. It's always going to be a part of how I train, but the real platform for me right now is on the business side.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can see that too. I mean, just doing research and looking you up, like, you're all over the place. There's all this different kinds of shit that comes up. So, I mean, you kind of mentioned it too. Like, you just started kind of putting stuff online. Is that how kind of the muscle doc persona kind of came to be?
Yeah, I never had a social media account before, like the Muscle Doc Instagram. Like, I had a Facebook and a MySpace page when I was living in Riverside, so many years ago. But the Muscle Doc started with, I don't think I ever could have imagined that this would be like where it ended up, but it was meant to be something to bring education, or what I thought the market needed from an education standpoint, in resistance training and rehabilitation sports performance. So it was always geared towards being a vehicle for distributing information. And just, you know, it's morphed into a podcast, it's morphed into a YouTube channel, it's morphed into basically an entire company that's the entire purpose of it. So yeah, the Muscle Doc YouTube started I want to say I had 2 or 3 semesters left of school, and I was just I was working with people in the fitness industry, working out with people in the fitness industry, was able to watch how they were monetizing the attention that their page got, and thought it to be like a really interesting sort of new frontier. And there were a handful of people in my industry, like the more like rehabilitative physiotherapy, physical therapy, chiropractic route, that were doing it. So I thought, why not, you know, to put some skin in the game. And I just started the page and started posting, you know, very poorly produced, shitty audio whiteboard videos of me talking fast, trying to fit it all in 60 seconds on Instagram, and then evolved to YouTube, and then longer form into podcast. And it's just sort of snowballed from there.
Yeah, man. It might be hard for people to understand. And even if you can't find all the content right away, I get it. Just like, you know, you got the podcast over here. You can make a living alone on YouTube nowadays, but you got everything going on at once. And pre-script, if I was gonna just let you kind of educate me on it, tell me about it, and look. But it basically, it's like you can get certified through you online, right?
Yeah. So Prescript is a continuing education company that's centered around like the health and fitness industry. So we offer 7 different courses that cover different subdisciplines around health and fitness, like with our core curriculum being our level 1, level 2 track. And then we have some ancillary courses that are more specific to different domains within weightlifting and resistance training and rehabilitation, sports performance. It really started off as a single course. Like, I kept getting posed the question, like, if you could take one class, or if you could learn one thing to be a successful coach or trainer or physical therapist, like, what would it be? I was like, there's a market here, right? Like, there's at least a market of one. Like, every day I was getting this question. So I took the question a little bit more seriously and made quite an expansive answer. And I put the course for sale without it even being complete. And I started to just gauge the audience of the first cohort and have continuously polished the content of their Prescript level one ever since. Like, I teach it live. So I just really, like, literally just before this, I was teaching one of our lectures. And, you know, you're able to read the audience, you can see faces rather than just pre-recording it and having this content just exist just kind of forever and without being updated and refreshed, or like without being able to be delivered in a way where you know it's being grasped. So in the level one, the level two, I teach live still, so I can continuously turn over the content, you know, semester over semester. And then we have some pre-recorded options. We have some hybrid courses that are pre-recorded content and lecture material. So it's been, yeah, it's been fun, man. Like, again, I never thought I'd find myself in the education space, but it's been like a huge challenge, both from like, you know, being able to deliver content, but also understanding like how people learn is a whole nother element of teaching that can sometimes be taken for granted. So like, you know, studying, I spent a decade or more studying the content that I teach, but now, you know, I feel like for the next 5 decades it'll actually be learning how to teach, right? So it's something that I kind of take the pedagogy behind actually delivering the content in a way that's effective, because it is, you know, it's not easy. Like, it's difficult. No. It's trying to synthesize 15 years of education and 15 years of experience into 16 weeks and make it palatable and more importantly for the trade that we're in, actionable, right? Like, you know, my goal is ultimately not necessarily the coach or the trainer or the physical therapist, it's the people they interact with. And like, you know, I can fill people's heads with big words and lots of syllables, and I can talk really fast about stuff that I like to think I know backwards, but that's not good. It's a cool parlor trick, but it's not useful if they don't know how to actually impart that knowledge. It's like it's like philosophy in a sense, because it doesn't actually exist in theory, it only exists in practice. So it's an interesting divergence of theory and practical application, because it's taught all in a more or less hands-off setting, but you need to teach it in a way that prompts real life action for what you say to be useful. So it's a constant challenge, but it's probably the most fun part of it is that piece.
It's cool, man. That's really cool. I mean, it's 2021 too, right? So people are learning all over the place and differently than ever. And you've created a great business to provide this, and not just like mass produce it and send it out, but to actually get that direct kind of one-on-one learning as well. It being live is kind of what I'm getting at, you know, like it's not just like any, you can just watch anything on my YouTube or you can buy my package. You can actually ask me questions and again, that plays into like the teaching aspect of it. I always relate teaching and coaching together. And again, something that you love and have so much experience and knowledge on, dating all the way back to your Windsor days as just a kid and then being a Good Life trainer or whatever. I mean, so much goes into it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, because it's skin in the game, right? Like if I pre-recorded it and edited it, and if I, you know, I misspoke or I didn't recall something on, or I didn't have an analogy or a parable to, or an anecdote. It's like, you're really trying to teach by like as an exemplar, right? Like when you're with a client or where you're with a patient, or you're with an athlete, like there's no better sign of competency than being able to think on your feet, like being adaptable. So it's like shit goes wrong all the time when I teach. Yeah. All the time. I was teaching from my laptop in Australia during COVID when I was locked down during like the forest fires. And I'd set my times originally based off Eastern Standard Time. So I would have to teach from 2:30 to 3:30 in the morning when I was in Australia. And halfway through a lecture, a bunch of cockroaches started crawling across my screen. I was like, I saw the rest of the lecture fucking sitting up in my chair like this, because I fucking hate cockroaches. And like, I was in Kauai once and the internet to the entire island got cut because it's served by a fiber optic cable that runs from Oahu. I was in a McDonald's in Sunny Isles, Florida, and a crackhead started shaking me down for money while I was teaching in the back corner. They call it the Mick Lecture, and it's one of like the synonymous moments in our company's history, like our level two coaches that were there. This is like, I was driving to an office that I was using in Weston, Florida, when I was down there working with a bunch of NFL athletes in the off season. There was a crazy accident that put an hour delay on my drive. I wasn't going to make it to the office. I needed to pivot and find a solution. But it's like, pivoting and finding solutions is what coaching is, right? So it's as equal, and I've had this explained to me, like it's equally as beneficial to be able to learn the content of how to pivot and transition and scale and index and progress and regress and adapt and optimize exercise as it is to see someone do it in a lateral way and just delivering the content itself, right? So it's like, I got to be engaged with 50 blank faces or 100 blank faces or 200 blank faces. Well, I literally have a guy with gold teeth and like a Beretta in his waistband in my face next to me. Like I have these headphones on and I have to be here, take my headphones off and talk this guy down and still flip through slides. And so it's fun like that. Cause there's a meta lesson there that keeps me engaged. If I just recorded it, put it up on the internet, like I wouldn't stay sharp. I wouldn't see the different facial reactions. I wouldn't learn. Right. Like I learned so much from doing it because it's like I need to rethink my thought process because I'm out in open field. Like I'm exposing what I think works and what I know to be effective to criticism. Like, and it's what we have now is polished. It's ironclad. It's war ready. Like you can try and sync these theories because thousands of people have sat there and appraised it critically going like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. So it's fun. And there are things where you just got to, you know, take ideas and completely torch them and, you know, have a phoenix moment of a new idea rising from that. But I tell everyone every single semester that I just do this because I learn more than they do. So it's like, thanks. And then it's a joke, but I don't know if it is because I get a collective wisdom of thousands of coaches a year that I get to interact with.
Yeah. You're always learning, right? Like you don't stop learning. So you're going to be learning from your students as you're teaching, right? And some crazy stories, but obviously, like you said, some fun times throughout short career and yet long career in life, you know. But before we begin to wrap it up, you talked about, you know, working with some NFL players in the offseason. I've seen you got to work with Shaq. I'm sure you got to work with a lot of cool people and maybe people that you've never heard of or people that you're, you know, maybe in awe of.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely had a crazy roster of clients. But I think you just start to realize that everyone has a crazy story. Like some of them are my favorite clients, like obviously like, you know, Shaq and the football players. And like, I could tell you stories about NFL players that bet 150. I had one client, I'm not going to name his name. He just won a Super Bowl ring last year. So that's enough to narrow it down. Mm-hmm. I went to his place. He flew me in to work with him and he was 45 minutes late, but I was in his house and he was in his house. I was like, dude, what the fuck? Like, how are you? I'm billing you for this shit. And he didn't care because he just won $150,000 playing a video game against a very famous rapper on a 2-on-2 game that he had recruited the top Call of Duty player in the world over Twitter, paid this guy 10 grand to play with him to play a 2-on-2 game versus this famous rapper for $150,000. So he was completing that 2-on-2 game while I was upstairs and he came up $140,000, which doesn't mean anything because he's, you know, he makes $17 million plus, yeah. I think $17 million a year. But it's like shit like that is cool. But then also like, you know, I've had clients when I was in the Silicon Valley that were, you know, that one of my favorite clients is the head cardiothoracic surgeon at Stanford University. He's a guy from Toronto who, you know, he would come in after doing, you know, these surgeries that are so long that he's worn a diaper for a day and probably like 27 hours while he's, you know, removing lungs and spleens and livers and just rerouting blood vessels. So it's like, you get all sorts, right? Like fitness touches so many, it touches everyone to a certain degree. And like, you know, a lot of people will sit at the same table and bring their stories to me. It's like, I always, and it's funny because I'm looking at a picture of him right now. Like I think of Parts Unknown by Anthony Bourdain. Like I think of how food is like that. Like it's such a common experience. Like I find training to be the same thing. Like, you know, so you'll hear some of the craziest fucking stories. One of my coaches that I work with that at Prescript, he was before he got into fitness, he was part of the anti-rhino poaching unit in Ghana. And he was an international arms dealer. So he would hunt people that were hunting rhinoceros. And he got shot close range of the 9mm in the chest. And I learned that in between sets. Right? So it's just, I don't know.
The small talk you have in the gym isn't the same that you guys.
But it's everywhere, man. Like even Windsor, when I was you know, you'd hear crazy ass stories of like, you know, Jesus trained guys in Hell's Angels. And it's like, you know, there's restaurants. You're like, really? That restaurant's like, yeah, dude. Like, just fly at 2 a.m. in the morning. There's a bunch of fucking black Mercedes in the parking lot. And so it's just, it's a disarming place where people can just, they go there and they feel safe and they'll just, they'll tell you anything. Any trainer, any coach will be like, I'm just a therapist. So it's amazing, like, what you can learn about other people when it's just like, just in between sets, whether it's, you know, the cardiothoracic surgeon or some guy with a Harley Davidson and like a bunch of drugs in a hockey bag or some shit. It's fun, man.
Yeah. And I mean, to bring it back to that, the Windsor part of it too. I mean, as many of the people that we have here, the stories that we have, there's also people coming here and creating stories and stuff like that. Kind of like you're talking about as well. And as we begin to wrap it up, I was going to ask you, what's the one thing you miss most about Windsor and why is it Windsor pizza?
What do I miss most about Windsor? I think it's just the people, man. Yeah, like
family, you know,
it's in its essence, it never changes, which can be good or bad. And like, there's always a divide of people who hate and love Windsor. And I feel like the divide is those who left and those who stayed.
Yeah.
Right. The second you leave, you realize, like, you realize what you have, I think, is probably the best way to put it. Where if you stay, you don't know how good you got it. Like, you know, I never felt, no matter how, and like, you know, work downtown, there's guns, there's drugs, there's whatever. I never felt in danger, right? I never felt like I could do anything wrong. Cause it's like, you know, the cops, and you, like, if you, as long as you acted reasonable, they'd act reasonable. And there's an unwritten, it seems to me as if there's like an unwritten code in Windsor where it's like, there's just a set of rules and principles and values that if you abide by, it's like you could have a really good life. And I just don't think you'll find that anywhere else, where it's like a lot of times that there's, you know, not that it's by any chance, like any stretch of the imagination, a fairy tale, but it's like, you know, good seems to conquer in Windsor to a certain degree. Like, you keep your nose clean, you get your homework done, you go to work and you're honest and you work hard, and like, it just kind of works out. And in other places, that's not the case. Like, you can go to cities and you can approach it with that value set, and the city can spit you up and kick you out, where it's like Windsor, it'll always reward that. It seems like it always seems like it lends a hand to those people who are like, you know, punching the clock, which is something that like, you don't find everywhere else. And if you go too long without seeing it, it gets a little bit like disheartening, but when you go home, it's always there. Yeah. And it just comes down to the people, man. Like, I remember I got, you know, I was in a jam outside. I worked at the bar the door at Treehouse.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll still go home. Like, oh, that's a Treehouse guy. Like, I haven't worked at Treehouse in like 13 years. And I remember, like, you know, there was some pretty bad shit happening, and I went to grade school with, like, and I don't know where he's at, and if he's ever listened or anyone knows, I mean, it's Windsor, because you probably do. There was a kid, he was older than me. There was a dude named Terry Malden, who I knew from grade school, who, you know, him and his brother Kevin, I think he had a younger sister, like, Terry, for better or for worse, like, he took care of business and whatever that means. And I was in, you know, I was outnumbered and outgunned, and Terry just remembered me from MS Hetherington. And he just took care of things for me. Like, I was cornered by a bunch of people until Terry was like, wait a minute, I know this guy. I don't know these other guys, but I know that kid. We went to grade school together, and he grabbed three or four guys in his friend group, let's call it, to be diplomatic, and they just came in. And I was at the fireworks one time, and I had a beef with some kids from another high school. And some guys who knew me from playing hockey, like, I was, again, cornered and outnumbered and outgunned. The next thing, you know, I look over my shoulder, and it's my mom's friend's son and his friends. And one of them had procured a shovel. I was like, don't worry, we got it. And so it's just like, you always just know, like, this Windsor hero is just going to come out of, like, the woodwork. It's like, I don't think I was ever like, you know, work downtown, people are drunk, you get in situations, it's like the sober bouncer, you're obviously a target, you're walking down by the river, someone wants to start some shit and jump you or whatever, and like, you know, I think as long as you had, like, you kept your nose clean, like, as crazy as it got sometimes, you always just had this feeling like something, like you were going to be okay. And sure enough, I was like, there's a guy with a shovel. There's Terry with four guys, right? Like, with four bottles from inside the club. It's like, they're just going to take care of it for you. So it's, I don't know. It's funny. It's like,
yeah.
You look back. I remember when, fuck, I hate to go on, but I literally could do this all day. Yeah. I remember driving down Droulard Road at 2, 3 a.m. in the morning after the bars. I was driving my buddy home. And we pull up. It was like in between. It was the bad part of Droulard, like between Droulard at Tecumseh Road and Wyandotte at some point in that strip. And there was a guy at one of the stop signs walking across the street with a chainsaw that was on. No shirt on, jeans, straight out of like an Eminem early LP. And I was like, what the? And he looked in like the window of my like whatever the 98 Sebring convertible. And me and my buddy were just sitting there going like, I wonder who he's looking for. And like he looked in and like realized that whoever was in the car wasn't who was meant to be on the other end of the and he like tipped his chainsaw, like he kind of like revved it a bit, like, oh, have a good day, sir, like as you were, and just continued off into the fucking chain link fences. I was like, oh, okay. And it wasn't until years later I'm like, that was kind of fucked up.
Yeah, that was,
I never felt like, you know, like, oh shit, what do we do? Do I reverse it? Like, he's gonna chase us, he's gonna jump on the car. I'm like, I wonder who he's looking for. I wonder what drives someone to like get a chainsaw to like get their point across, huh? And then like he's just like looked, oh okay, hey, have a good night, fellas, and just kept going. I was like, this is it, this is Windsor.
Droulard,
I have literally a million stories like that.
That's crazy. Man, that we could do this all day. I mean, maybe we'll have to do another one just talk about, yeah, Windsor. You know, we got your story down. We were able to tell your story here on Windsor City Sports, so I appreciate you taking the time to do it, man. You're a busy guy, okay. I'm sure, so thanks so much.
I appreciate you putting this together, man. It's cool to have a collective of like the voices that came out, because I think it is a unique place. It's a unique place for some, just for this very reason, that two people will look at that and be like, no, it's a story. It's stories worth telling, right? Because a lot of times I think we get discarded, pushed aside, just like it's Toronto. It's not Toronto. It's not London. It's not Montreal or Ottawa. But it's like that. Yeah, but we have our own. There's a romanticization of Windsor that I think is very unique, if for no other reason that people are willing enough to recognize it to do something like this.
Huge thanks to Dr. Jordan Shallow for joining me on Zoom to do that chat. He's got quite the setup there, as you heard, obviously, about his podcast, Prescript. A buddy of mine is actually planning on going to one of his seminars or training sessions pretty soon out in London, I think. And man, he's traveling around the world. I think he's in California right now as I'm recording. I've seen him posting some stuff. Cool guy. Again, another Windsorite that I didn't know was from Windsor. You know, I actually, like, I didn't even know a lot about him, but I'd seen like his videos and stuff pop up on Instagram and stuff like that, and just thought it was, you know, one of those like Bradley Martin kind of deals. Not the Windsor Bradley Martin, but, you know, like the Nelk boys Bradley Martin, just one of those kind of things, which is exactly what it is, but better. Cooler. Maybe not cooler, but, you know, same sort of deal. And very professional videos that they produce, and he's a teacher. So much to talk about with him, and just the crazy Windsor stories. I love that Droulard story, and you know, stuff like that. So thanks so much to Jordan for taking the time to come on and shoot the shit with me. Again, I gotta pull up his Wikipedia, his elite prospects here, and see if there's anyone of note that he played with. And you guessed it, not really too much. Just 2 years here with the Kingsville Comets back when they had that team. But still, cool stuff. Thanks so much for taking the time to do it, man. Never know who will pop up on Wind City Sports, including a chiropractor, a former powerlifter, small-time hockey player, and a former bouncer, personal trainer. Shares many titles, Jordan Shallow. Again, thanks, man, for taking the time to do that. But, you know, at the top of the show, we kind of ran down the whole... Well, not ran down, but we talked a little bit about that situation with the St. Clair Fratmen, and got you caught up with the Windsor Spitfires, which are two of our main things going on right now in Windsor sports, aside from, of course, the Lancers and the other college teams. St. Clair College baseball is going, cross country, lots of sports are back in action, but... one thing is our women's hockey team at the University of Windsor.
Maggie Peterson, assistant captain of the team, is going to be a cover athlete for the OUA, voted in by, you know, the fans. Pretty cool stuff. So congratulations to Maggie. Saturday night, Windsor Wright and former guest of the show, Quiet Storm, Randa Marcos, snapped a four-fight losing streak with a unanimous decision over Lavina Souza at UFC. UFC Fight Night in Vegas. She previously had a five losses out of six of her previous fights. Wasn't looking good for Randa. She's an OG of the women's divisions. Again, from Windsor, she's been in there for a long time, and just really needed to bounce back win, and finally got that last night. And in other news, another Windsorite, TJ Laramie, has actually had to pull out of his fight on November 6th. I seen him post on Instagram about some injury he had recently suffered. Can't remember or find exactly what that was right now. See if I can find it. Looks like he had like a staph infection or something from what I'm reading here. No doctor, but a MRSA, and he had to have a part of it cut out of his inner thigh. So assuming some sort of staph, or it definitely, staph. Ew. Gross. But fortunate for him, after a incredible amateur and pro career before getting to UFC, it's been a struggle for him, making it there and being very impressive in Dana White's contender series, and then just, you know, sometimes the luck doesn't get the best of you. But a little bit up and down for him in the UFC, but I'm sure he still has a few more chances before it's too late. Now I'm going to begin to wrap it up. I mean, there's a lot of other sports we can go through. There's so many sports back, and now, you know, doing this podcast again, it's hard to imagine how I could ever incorporate every team into this show, in like about a 1 hour show, and a long interview with Jordan this week. So man, we have some teams killing it too, though. You know, you got to consider the Lakeshore Canadians, LaSalle Vipers, Essex Ravens are back, like so many teams, St. Clair again, baseball, cross country, soccer, same with the Lancers, soccer, hockey is back to exhibition this past weekend, as well as basketball. Things are starting to shape up, and you know, Ontario has announced that hopefully by March this whole thing could be over, and I'm very excited about that. I'm very excited to go to my first Spitfire game in nearly 2 years, hopefully on this Thursday, as they welcome in Guelph, and go over to the States and go down to Toronto and go to some games again. Things are shaping up in Windsor, and that's part of the reason why the Wind City Sports Podcast is back. Again, brought to you by Amherstburg Chevrolet Buick GMC, located on Sandwich Street South in Amherstburg. They're now offering the Fall into Savings event with 0% financing for up to 84 months, and this includes the new 2020 Buick Envision. Comes in a couple different colors, but again, the Fall into Savings event offering 0% financing. Check them out at amherstburggm.com. Again, on Sandwich Street South in Amherstburg, give them a shout or go down there and check out some of the cars they have lined up. Tell them the Wind City Sports Podcast sent you. Again, that's Amherstburg Chevy Buick GMC, located on Sandwich Street South in Amherstburg. Huge shout out to Amherstburg GMC out in Amherstburg, Aberg. But anyway, that's going to be it this week on the Wind City Sports Podcast. My name is Drake DeMora, here every Monday with you on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and anywhere podcasts are found, for the Wind City Sports Podcast, Windsor's only local sports podcast, featuring interviews with local athletes, coaches, entrepreneurs, and much more from the past, present, and future. You never know who might pop up on the Wind City Sports Podcast. Be sure to give us a like, follow, subscribe on whatever social media you might use, and as well as follow our YouTube channel. Give us a subscribe on the Wind City Sports YouTube channel. On social media, you can find us at WinCity_sports. Very easy to find nowadays after over 5 years of doing this. WINCITY is all one word. And you can also follow me, Drake DeMore, on Twitter and Instagram at Drake DeMore. But until next time, smell you later.